The word authenticity in relation to musical performance has various possible applications, but in present-day musical parlance it is most commonly used in connection with performances of old music, that is, music of the 18th and earlier centuries. An authentic performance is held to be one which seeks to reproduce the performing conditions and the style of playing appropriate to the period in which the music was written, and to avoid instrumental or other anachronisms. To take an obvious example, authenticity would rule out the playing of Bach's keyboard works on a modern piano. In recent times, authenticity has become something of a preoccupation in some musical and critical circles. For some of us, authenticity has become an absolute prerequisite in the execution of old music. It's only in the last 10 or 15 years that this outlook has become at all general. The musicological research work on which it is based is nothing new, of course, but for a long time its findings were pretty generally ignored for practical purposes, except by certain rather esoteric groups of specialists. But of all people, the slowest and the most reluctant to submit themselves to the dictates of scholars are, with a very few exceptions, interpretative artists such as musicians and actors. And though we may think their reluctance regrettable, we should not, I think, immediately condemn it as being entirely unreasonable. Quite a lot is demanded, both of the executant and of the listener. But it's about the executant that I want to speak. And his responsibilities can perhaps be examined under three main headings: his text, his interpretation, and his instrument. First, the text. Until quite late in the 18th century, composers inserted very few performing directions in their works, and what we've come to know as expression marks were virtually non-existent. During the 19th century, it became customary to publish or republish these works in the form of editions with a capital E, editions made by famous or not so famous instrumentalists, in which the editor's own interpretation was superimposed upon the original text by means of sometimes very numerous indications of tempo, dynamics, phrasing, accentuation, and general expression. It was not at all uncommon for the editor to alter and rewrite a phrase or a chord here or there if he considered the original to be crude or miscalculated. It was not considered in any way necessary to distinguish between the composer's original plain text and the editorial additions to it. Indeed, it would have been considered almost improper to display the naked text of an early musical composition without such editorial clothing. Self-respecting students and performers now demand to see for themselves what Bach or Handel or Rameau actually wrote without editorial interference. They want the Urtext, as it is called. The Urtext, or original text of such music, was formerly something of a luxury, to be found only in expensive and monumental publications such as the Bachgesellschaft edition or similar encyclopedic collections, which were intended in any case rather for the scholar's desk than for the music stand. Nowadays, through the initiative of several leading music publishers, Urtext editions covering a wide range of early and classical music are easily accessible and obtainable, and there is an increasing demand for them. However, having decided on a substantially accurate text, the next thing is to play it, and this may prove much more problematical. For one thing, the notation which the composer used may have meant something quite different in his day from what it came to mean later, and for another thing, composers of the Baroque and earlier periods often wrote down their music in a fashion which by modern standards is quite incomplete, omitting, for example, traditional embellishments, which the contemporary player would have supplied as a matter of course. The notation of rhythm was often imprecise and inconsistent, the alternation of long and short notes, for one thing, being variously expressed or sometimes not expressed at all. The French composers of the period took it for granted that the notes of almost any running melodic passage would be played alternately long and short in any case. These and similar rhythmic conventions lapsed and were forgotten, as were also those concerned with ornamentation and embellishments. until the 18th century, a trill or turn was an inseparable feature of any cadence. Composers often neglected to write them in. 19th century players left them out. Quite apart from any of these problems of notation, the whole style of musical execution was changing during the 19th century. A smooth legato was tending to replace the earlier, more detached style of playing. The sharply articulated angularity of many old rhythmic formulae was going out of fashion, and the studied unevenness of the old French notes inégales, where it was remembered at all, was considered abhorrent to civilized taste. What was happening was quite simply that the whole pronunciation of music was changing, and until authenticity reared its head, musicians have continued happily to mispronounce the music of Bach and Handel in much the same way as actors continue to mispronounce the language of Shakespeare, which sounded very different in his day from what it does now. The parallel is far from exact, but it's worth thinking about. Finally, we come to the matter of authentic instruments, and this is quite a problem. Even confining ourselves to the Baroque era and to the more important instruments used during it, we find that several of them had become obsolete during or even before the beginning of the 19th century, such as the recorder, the viola da gamba, and the harpsichord. Of the greater number which survived, nearly all were to be altered and modified, in some cases nearly out of recognition. The piano, for instance, which had been invented at the very beginning of the 18th century and was in general use by the end of it, has in the last 200 years been developed, I think, literally out of recognition. A modern concert grand hasn't got the slightest resemblance to Mozart's piano, which by comparison sounded just like a harpsichord. It is, of course, unquestionable that the modifications and technical improvements introduced during the 19th century and continuing up to our own day involved in many, if not most cases, an alteration in tone quality, not necessarily for the better. The out-and-out authenticist would like to have all music played on instruments of a contemporary type, and during recent years quite a number of performances have been given and recordings made under these very conditions. The difficulties, of course, are considerable. The staging, for example, of an orchestral performance, even on a small scale, where all the instruments are authentic models or reproductions and are played in the authentic style, is no mean achievement. A few years ago, I happened to remark to a student of my acquaintance that a particular modern harpsichord, on which I was just about to give a recital, had an exceptionally fine 8-foot stop. I said, "It's a really beautiful sound." "Ah," he replied, "but is it the right sound?" Those words, incidentally, sum up the attitude of many present-day enthusiasts, but I quote them here by way of exemplifying this business of choosing the appropriate instrument. The program I was playing that evening contained 16th-century English music, 17th-century German, early 18th-century Italian and French music, and a Haydn sonata written in about 1770. To get the right sound, as that student put it, for all the pieces in this program, I should have needed 4 or 5 different instruments. Well, some players accept these restrictions, and either they confine each of their programs to music of one period and style, using the instrument appropriate to it, or they do in fact use perhaps not 4 or 5 instruments, but at any rate 2 or even 3 in one concert, so as to reproduce as nearly as possible the exact sound which the composers had in mind when they wrote their music. Now, this is admirable, obviously. But there are 1 or 2 things about it which make me more than a little uneasy. However you define the traditional role of the interpretative artist, it wasn't ever this. At no previous period have musicians, have public performers of music, been expected to work in this kind of way, least of all during the period of the very music we're talking about. The great, or even the normally good, performers of the Baroque era enjoyed and claimed a very wide freedom of interpretation. They felt that they had a genuinely creative role to play in a musical performance. Sometimes their creative instincts ran away with them, and they got their knuckles rapped by the composers. But all the same, it was universally accepted that a good executant was something much more than a sort of human duplicating machine. I find it difficult to believe that musicianship can easily flourish under the conditions imposed by extreme authenticism. And though there may be individual performers of genius who can submit to these immensely restrictive disciplines whilst retaining the personal flair and inspiration which make a worthwhile musical performance, they must be the exception. And the procedures which they adopt, if generally applied, will, as it seems to me, tend rather to stifle than to nurture the very qualities which have characterized the art of musical expression over the centuries. Music is an art and not a science. Whether or not I am underestimating the value of authenticity, I'm quite certain that some people overestimate it. And I get a little fretful when some of our professors and lecturers and music critics try to persuade the public that these values are of overriding importance and that one shouldn't really enjoy listening to Rostropovich playing Bach's Gamba sonatas because he's being unauthentic and playing them on the cello. And I think it's a load of sheer nonsense. Well now, contrary to the impression you must have received, I am entirely in favour of musicians learning the correct procedures for the performance of old music and applying them intelligently. I get as irritated as the next man when I hear a performer consistently getting his ornaments wrong or playing the whole of a Bach organ fugue in an unbroken legato from start to finish. But there are other things to think about. And certainly when we are dealing with great music, authenticity is not the most important thing. A great work of art has a very real life of its own, on which it is only just embarking when it leaves the hands of its composer. It has great powers of survival. It can flourish under the most unfamiliar conditions. It can even sometimes take on a new lease of life and disclose new facets of itself in response to altered circumstances and to a changing aesthetic climate, facets of which its composer may not have been fully aware. Sometimes a great work of art doesn't really come to life until it is liberated from what may be the restricting conventions of its own period. It has no need whatever to have a fence put round it with a notice saying reserved for authentic pass holders only. It's common knowledge that a masterpiece may only come to be fully appreciated long after its creator is dead. Everybody knows this, but some people are not prepared to accept the implications of it. Everybody knows that Bach's music was not assessed at its true greatness until long after his death. It was the essentially Victorian Mendelssohn and the arch-romantic Schumann who were the protagonists of the great Bach cult of the 19th century, and from whom we derive the traditions of performance which are now so often under fire. It was the perception and insight of 19th century musicians, despite their ignorance of Baroque techniques, which first evaluated Bach at his true worth. Are we now to say that that insight was totally at fault, and that the style of interpretation which derives from it presents only a travesty of the original? I think not. I think we should keep a sense of proportion.